Welcome to Series 2 of the Social Care Podcast, Sharing Stories, with me, Audrey Moore, and David Bagnall, a.k.a. Baggy.
This podcast is for the benefit of anyone working in or studying social care. We like to chat with interesting people in the social care world and hear their stories.
So welcome back to the Social Care Podcast. We are delighted to have back two of our guests that we had who interviewed with us at the Social Care Ireland Conference, and that's Cindy Offer and Anita Owen. Ladies, you're very welcome back. And I believe, Anita, you're actually out on a trip with the Tall Ships at the moment. So, Cindy, maybe you want to just refresh people's memories, or in case people didn't hear the earlier episode, of what exactly you do with SAIL Training Ireland.
Yes, thank you again for having us back. We run residential weeks with young people on board from all over Ireland, and they get to sail a tall ship. They get to work in the role as the same as the professional crew, alongside the professional crew. But it's also a voyage of discovery. It's a personal journey for them. You know, as we would say, one voyage, many journeys, because they learn a lot about themselves and about the strengths that they have that they wouldn't necessarily have given themselves credit for prior to being put into the situation that we put them into. So they would come on board as strangers, effectively. And over a period of 5, 7, or 10 days, they would form a very tight-knit community where they would support each other with the common goal of getting the ship from A to B.
Fantastic. And Anita, do you want to tell us how your voyage is going right now?
Yeah, it's gone great. So it's similar to what we do in the SAIL training trips, except these ones are for 3 days only. Because we have a good relationship with the Pelican, they asked Cindy, would she release me to do a bit of volunteer work with them cooking for a week? So it was something that I always wanted to do as well. So we got the kids on for 3 days. So we got on, the kids got on Sunday, and we went Monday, then we headed out up to an island called the Island of Cull, which is a former whaling station. Most amazing scenery. The second night we moored at an anchorage, and it was like as if we planted a boat in the middle of Glendalough Upper Lake. Unbelievable, the scenery. And then we came back to Oban yesterday, and the kids disembarked. They're kids from all around the world that I'm with this time, as opposed to, we say, in Ireland, we're kids from Ireland, England, some from England, and obviously all over Ireland. And we got another batch on last night, and I'm so excited because today we head off to Tobermory, which is where they make the kids' program Ballymorey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I only know that because I have
children. Any of the crew members, because we're like kids all giddy because a lot of us haven't obviously grown up in the program. So that's today's plan. The weather, though, has been exactly like Irish weather, as you'd expect in Scotland. But on the SAIL training voyage, it's a lot better because you've a full week, so you really get to integrate and know the kids. So, so far, so good.
I was saying, from when we met at conference, I said I hadn't heard about this at all. And as I was saying before we came online, I went back and I was raving about what I heard to the people I work with. And then I was amazed to find out that some of our students had actually been out with you on the boat. And I was wondering, like, we spoke before about young people with disabilities going on this. And the reason I love it is because I don't like being risk averse, and I love challenges. So could you give us like a little bit of information on what the challenges are people with disabilities or without disabilities would be facing? Well,
the last voyage, me and Cindy went out, and we had one of the kids, and his dad came out as a buddy. And then there was obviously three mentors on it. And the challenges would be the fact of the disruption to their daily routine, and also the challenges of, can they get up the rigging? Because we like to encourage, because the way we look at it is, as I say to some of the kids when they're afraid, I'm like, listen, you'd be afraid for 15 minutes of your life. If you don't get up and down the rigging for the whole of your life, you'll always regret not going to do it, because you'll say, I should have done it, I should have done it, because the chances are you mightn't get the opportunity to go back up the rigging. Also, sitting around and having a meal together seems to be a big thing. And at the moment, the boat and the pelican, they're taking their phones. They only get the phone time, say, for half an hour a day. So extremely challenging. It's very funny watching how distressed they get over being taken away from the technology.
I could imagine as well that like a lot of young people who would be diagnosed as autistic and some that aren't, but mm-hmm. would have yeah. those tendencies, when they're put in an environment of low ceilings, small rooms, shared spaces, open yeah. spaces with lots of obstacles, it takes a lot of time and patience on the mentors to yeah. work with them on
yeah. Yeah.
new environment.
I think on that one, it's fair to say for us, mentors are invaluable for the skills that they actually bring with them. The crew have a role, and that's to keep the ship safe and to keep her sailing. Whereas we, you know, Anita mentioned the young person. In that particular voyage, we had four young people on board with autism. And it can be a challenge where they like things to be ordered. They know where they're going. They don't like change. And very often in an environment like that, the change can be quick and it can put them off kilter. So in that sense, that's where the mentors really come to the fore, by talking them through it and keeping them calm and showing them that they can actually get through situations like that.
It shows that they can make changes themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think a lot of young people with disabilities are grown up and the world has changed around them to make the life comfortable for them. But when yes. they get outside the family home or the residential house that they're living in, that's not custom made for them.
Yeah.
They find it hard to adapt because these changes aren't put up to them in the home or in the residential house or
the environment
they spend most of their time in.
Yes, yeah, I would agree. And there's a structure on board the ship and we expect everybody to participate within that structure. So if they're supposed to be on watch at 4 o'clock in the morning, we'll get out of bed.
Dietary things is also a big thing. I'm actually cooking on this voyage, whereas I only mentor with say a train in Ireland. But a big thing as well with some of the children with the autism is their food, their diet can be a big struggle for them. Yeah. Now, the last voyage we were in, we had a great chef, Shell, actually a Bray lady, and she was so flexible, probably a little bit too flexible. Where would we want them to stretch themselves, but not to the point that it's going to distress the person. We just try and encourage them. Well, can you not just try it and then we'll see what else we can do for you? We'd always make sure that they were looked after food-wise, but we also don't want to give in so quick.
Yeah, we encourage the challenge.
Yeah.
Well, that's it's the last time we spoke, and I'd been to space camp a few years, and I see similarities. Like we would have the pamper poles, which are like 30-odd feet high, and behind like the old telegraph poles. And when you see young people who use walking sticks or crutches or walkers and climbing these poles, and they look exactly the same as everybody else climbing the pole, except a bit more difficulty, and seeing the staff, the helpers and that standing around, tears in their eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Because they understand that this individual is achieving something that nobody would have thought they were doing once the challenge was put up to them. And I think that's a big part of what you do, I think is brilliant, is that you put the challenge there and then it's say, it's up to you to accept this challenge.
Yes, yeah, we do. And in fact, the young person that Anita spoke about earlier, when his father came on board as a buddy, part of our role was keeping them separate. So as he could go off with the lads and he could experience it, but he was safe in the knowledge that if he needed support, his dad was there.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you mentioned tears there. The bosun, Janice, she just couldn't believe, because the first time, no, he wasn't going to the rigging. But second time, not a hope was he going to the rigging. And the third time he looked at him, well, I'll try. And he went right up to the first gantry and across and down. And she just filled up. Because it's when you see that they actually, there's a level of trust that builds up over the first few days. And it's when that trust is there and you see that they will go the extra mile for you. It's just mind-blowing to see it. It really is.
The young lad was very lucky because the cabin he went into happened to be two kids that I know through scouting. And so I just had a little chat with them just for them to keep an eye out for him. And which was great because we went to the Isle of Man. So I didn't know if the father wanted to be with him going around with him, or would he let him go off due to like the autism? Would he let him ramble off on his own? He goes, no. So we buddied him up with two of my kids, and the three of them got on like a house on fire. Mm-hmm. And he got to experience being away from his dad, being on another island, having to go to a shop, use different currency, try figure things out. So he got the exact same experience as the rest of the trainees that were on board. And then, unfortunately, we had to keep the dad. I know, he was great crack. The father was a lovely man. Because he didn't have to do so much minding on his son, he became the photographer then on the trip.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So he got another role.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And tell us about the mentors. So what do people have to do to be a mentor? Because I can imagine some people listening might be interested in this.
Our mentors come from literally all walks of life. And they will undergo a 3-day training program designed by myself. And that covers everything from life on board, dealing with situations, safeguarding, and issues that may arise on board and how we deal with them. We also look very much at learning styles. Because it's very easy when you're working with a group of young people to focus on one aspect and maybe a child is left out, whereas we would work with learning styles as well, so they'll understand, you know, certain behaviours from a young person and how to address them. What we value most about our mentors is they bring their own skill set with them. They all have life experiences. They all share. And to be able to do that with the young people on board is amazing. For us, usually I would do one mentor training a year, and that's held in February. This year we actually ran two, so we trained 32 mentors this year, and our next mentor training now is already booked for the 16th to the 18th of February 2024. Ideally, I like people 25 and up to become mentors. They bring a level of maturity with them that really works well for us.
Well, it's just they've more life skills as well, you know. Like one of, as you said before, like one of our mentors has autism himself. So we're all inclusive with the trainees. We also are with our mentors as well. And he turned out to be a valuable asset. We were like wondering how he would manage himself because he's such a quiet young man. But it worked to our advantage because then the trainees on board didn't realize he was actually a mentor. So he was able to get all the scoop if they were up to divilment or the barrier was already broken down for him between trainees and mentors. There was no barrier up with the kids and him. Whereas they look at me and Cindy like that, we look like we're
good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, and for the record, Cindy's always the bad cop.
But I think that's a common thing I've found in my time in care is that, like myself, people come into social care historically from having previous jobs, previous careers, previous lives, that they learn stuff. And a lot of the young students that come straight from college have that, you know. And it's good to have the blend of the young and the old, you know, pass down the skills. Because I suppose us older people, as I'm talking about myself, we interact in a different way with people, you know. You have a certain level of easiness in yourself and fairly confident, you know, and you can pass that on without actually saying, listen, I'm teaching you to be confident.
You can encourage
people to be confident without pointing the finger and go, this is what I'm telling you and this is what you're going to learn, you know. And we have a way of doing it, and I think the confidence of youth as well is something that sometimes we forget about,
that we
don't have, you know. So the blend of that is really good, and that sounds like a positive plan that just happened.
As usual, this series of the Social Care Podcast has been sponsored by Trust Social Care Consultancy for the support and development of social care workers. Trust Consultancy offers professional supervision to both individuals and groups, as well as mentoring for anyone who wants to give their career in social care a boost. Now, back to the podcast.
10 o'clock at night, it was, you know, lights out, time for everybody to go below. And I was going around rallying them up. And I heard a comment from a young person. So rather than, you know, send her down to her cabin, I thought, So I've had a casual chat, which transpired to become a 3-hour conversation. And if she had a situation going on in her life, she wasn't sure how to deal with it. We just discussed options. But the following day, she actually went to one of the crew and she had said to him, she had never had a conversation like that in her life before with another adult. And that's invaluable. We don't judge. We will listen. If there is a need to bring the information forward, it's certainly brought forward. But that young person just needed to be able to open up, say what she had to say without feeling that she was going to be judged or whatever. And she came to me at the end of the voyage. She said, I'll never forget what you did for me. You know, and if that stands to her going forward, that's what we're all about.
Well, it comes down to reading situations and giving people space to grow and develop themselves. And
absolutely.
Because there's so much of modern life is instant, you know, and...
Talk about modern life. Look at us here. Now, I'm in up the top of Scotland in Hope, and Cindy's in Wexford, judging by the picture on the wall.
Yes.
Baggy, are you in Dublin?
Hello, yeah.
And
I'm in Kildare, yeah.
But right. I think the thing is that young people are growing up and they're so used to being given the answers now. And the likes of what you do and Space Camp and situations that myself and Audrey have worked in where you help people to find the answers and not give them what, like you said, you gave yourself to be open to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was accepted. And
yes,
that's a huge thing, is giving your time. And a lot of young people don't get the time nowadays because of the pace of life.
Absolutely.
Some of them don't even have basic life skills, like to wash a cup. Like, it's hilarious. So you stand in the galley and it's like, okay, let's see how many kids actually can wash up, and guess how many kids have dishwashers at home. And something as basic as washing a cup or segregating waste is another thing. We only have 2 bins on board the boat. One you put all your food in, except for your tea bags, and the other bag is everything else. And even some of them would struggle with something as basic as that. Yeah. This is not a lie. I swear to God, I wanted to fall around the place this morning. So we're on board this morning having breakfast, and one of the kids says, I don't know how to use... He wanted to make toast, but he couldn't use a toaster. And I was like, okay. And somebody just walked by, said, stick your bread in there, press the button down.
One of the places I worked in, we used to do the little individual cereal boxes.
Yeah.
And the kids would open the thing, pour the milk into the box, and they'd eat it. And then the box and the spoon went into the bin. Like, everything was just disposable, you know. Yeah. They eat and it's gone. That was, yeah. So there is a lot of life skills to be learned. And it sounds like the ships are a great environment.
The last voyage that we were on, we even had kids saying that just even learning how to make a cup of tea. They're like, oh, I can go home now and make my mum or my dad or whoever they're at home with a cup of tea. And I was like, okay then. I found that the kids that are in care are the ones that you have to be worrying about if they can cope, because they have the life skills of looking after themselves because of the situation that they're in. And like, some mentors be like, oh, I don't know how we're going to, you know, how will it be with, you know, the people that are in care or this, that and the other. And I'm like, hey, they be the ones that you have to least look after, because they are the ones that are self-sufficient. Just the ones that get everything and have everything are the ones that need the teaching, you know, simple things as like that, using the toaster or making a cup of tea.
Well, these are all like the social care things. So tell us about some of the fun things you do that get them going.
We were crab fishing last night, and the excitement, because they've never done that. And we didn't even have to have crab nets. So what I did is we got some of the, you know, the nets that your lemons and your limes come in, or your garlic comes in.
Yeah. So
put a bit of fish in that and put a string on it. And when we were up on the island of Cull, we were crab fishing. And the 15 and 16 year old lads thought this was unbelievable, that you could put a bit of fish in a little bag and throw it off the board. They can actually catch something. Was a big hit. And it was integrated in as part of the science program. So they were learning stuff, but they didn't actually know they were learning. And then the scientists on board, because we do a lot of science, voyages with Safe Train in Ireland and Pelican. And they did a lot. The new scientist on board at the moment is called Mickey. He's a chemistry teacher. So his skill set is fantastic. And because he teaches kids already, he's a great way of teaching them stuff where they'll actually know they're being taught.
I love
we
that.
We were in the Isle of Man there on our last voyage. And we had, again, the scientist was Sam, but the young people related so well to him. He became Scientist Sam. And when we go ashore, they asked, could he come on shore leave with us? So he literally became one of our team for the week. And it was brilliant to see because, you know, there were young people, no, not science. And all of a sudden he'd be sitting over a cup of coffee having a conversation. And then they'd say to me, you know, can we do such and such tonight? Like, whoa, hang on a second. Did you do anything in science today? And all of a sudden, they wouldn't have had a workshop, but all of a sudden they could feed back to me. And that was just through the general interaction they had with them. But we went to a beautiful beach on Peel, and we do, everywhere we go, we try and do, you know, some civic, and we were doing a beach cleanup. And there's a 14-year-old young person from Wexford, and he found the best treasure. He found a 1982 Irish punt note on the beach.
Wow.
The big green ones, you know, the big green ones that we had.
Yeah. Can I ask, did they like the statue at the museum going through the window, the Viking with the rope going through? Did you see that one in Peel?
No, we didn't get to the museum. We got to we guided a tour of the lifeboat station.
All right. No, there's a thing in the harbour, and anytime I've been there, the kids are amazed at this. So there's two bronze statues.
Okay.
And there's a rope going between them, and one is inside the building and one is outside going through the plate glass.
Wow.
Anytime I've been there, you should have a Google it, but the kids just stand there amazed at this. It's a very simple thing, but like when you're mentioning the science thing, you can't actually see where the rope is going through the hole in the glass.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant, because we've got a couple of more voyages now going out, and they will be going to Peel. So we'll certainly put that on the list of places to visit.
Museum
is great. Is it near the harbour, you said?
Yeah, it's right on the harbour.
Oh, because we went to the RNLI station, we got... this was like... Oh, yeah, because the other mentor works for the RNLI in Ireland, and I was like, oh, here, Sean, get your buns around the corner there and get us in the door to go in there. So we got even to get inside the Shannon class boat, and the kids were amazed at the technology that was on the boat. So they were able to explain all the equipment. So they were learning a bit of science stuff about weather and all that kind of stuff, and they don't even realise they're learning.
Brilliant.
And what about swimming? How were the kids with swimming?
They would swim more so from the smaller ships rather than the big Class A tall ship. We have a group out at the moment on our North Coast Explorer, and they're having great fun. They were up in Port Ellen in Scotland, the island of Islay. So they were all swimming off the boat last night.
Because I think one of them from inner city areas or country areas that probably hadn't done sea swimming. It's pretty different than the pool, isn't it?
It is. And in a situation like that, again, if you've got a young person that's not very confident, rather than have them stand back and not be able to do it, they'll wear a buoyancy aid and they can still go in the water and still have fun splashing around.
I wouldn't say that lasts long with the buoyancy aids on
the And Cindy, how many boats do you have out right now?
At the moment, I have one. We're on our 27th voyage of the season, and I've another 7 voyages to go. So we've put 400 young people out so far this year and another 150 to go.
And I have 2 more voyages left to go. I'm on the Erasmus voyage, and I think the last voyage of the year, Bolton Pelican.
Okay, so you're on a separate trip, is that it?
Cindy's leased me out for the week to the Pelican.
She's leased you out for the week.
She signed my contract for the week too, because this is what happens: is the mentors love us so much, and then they'll get on board the Pelican and they'll do the mentor training for the week or whatever, and then they'll come back next year. But all of a sudden, they're the crew on the Pelican.
Oh right.
Because what would happen is you'd have some of our mentors, and they want it as a career path. So in order to get their miles up, we have a good relationship with the Pelican, and we would liaise, you know, with mentors. And then sometimes if they're stuck, they'll ring Cindy, and Cindy go, yeah, I can give you somebody that could go on this crew, even though we're not doing any of the voyages anymore because of Brexit with the, some of the English things. We still have a really good relationship with the boat, you know, and Cindy's very generous subcontracting me out for the week.
Just to clarify on that, we do have very strong relationships with the UK, but with Brexit, the funding is no longer available. So we're still working. We work with MASC, which is the Merseysail Training Association. So we're working on voyages with them for next year. And our Erasmus program this year, delighted to say, is with Malta. So we'll have 50% of young people from Malta and 50% from Ireland on voyages.
So tell me, if somebody wants to get involved as a mentor, would they just contact Sail Training Ireland, or how would they get on that mentor training in February?
If they contact me through info@sailtrainingireland.com, I can then give them all the information that they need. There's minimum paperwork that has to be completed. Obviously, Garda vetting has to be part of it. But then we could offer them a place on the course coming up in February.
Fantastic. And for anybody who's worked with maybe young people in care or people with disabilities and they maybe have an interest in this, how would they get involved?
The same, just pick up a phone, call me or email me. I'm happy to come out to organisations and speak with, you know, if you've got a group of social care leaders, I'm happy to come out, talk to them about the benefits and what's available from us and take it from there. We try not to leave anybody behind, so finance shouldn't be an issue. So, for example, if an individual knows of a young person in the community that would really benefit, but knows that the finances aren't there within the family to be able to make it happen, don't be afraid to pick up a phone and talk to me. We will do our best to get a bursary to make sure that young person does have the experience.
So, ladies, thank you so much for coming back to talk to us. And I hope the rest of your season goes really, really well. And on into next year and the year after. I know that you've started planning for those trips as well. Thank you so much.
Really great. Really appreciate it. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you. Bye. Bye now. Thank you for listening to this, our last episode of Series 2 of the Social Care Podcast. We sincerely hope that you've enjoyed this series and we would love to get your feedback. Feel free to leave a comment or email us at thesocialcarepodcast@gmail.com. As I've mentioned before, we now have an Instagram page, so please go over there and give us a like. We can keep you updated on the new series as it arrives. Baggy and I hope to produce a third series of the Social Care Podcast in the future. We would love to hear from you if you are interested in being a guest on our podcast, or if there's someone in particular that you want to hear, please reach out and let us know. Finally, I'd like to extend a huge thank you to all of our guests that have come on the Social Care Podcast this season. We are seriously indebted to you and I hope you realise how grateful we are. Finally, I'd like to say a huge thank you to my co-host Baggy, who has just been amazing this series, and I could not have done this without him. So a huge, huge thank you to Baggy. Okay, that's it for now. So take care and hopefully we'll see you back for season 3.